Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. A Broadway great was remembered by other theater luminaries this week. The life and work of the late Hal Prince was celebrated this past Tuesday at the Majestic Theater, home to the directors The Phantom of the Opera. Stephen Sondheim was there, so was Lin-Manuel Miranda, Bernadette Peters, and Carol Burnett. Hamilton director Thomas Kail said at the memorial, quote, "My directing Mount Rushmore was essentially Hal Prince's face four times." Over the course of his 70-year career, Prince earned more Tony Awards than any other person in history, 21 to be exact. He had a long and storied theater trajectory, producing West Side Story in 1957, Fiddler on the Roof in 64, Cabaret in 66. He directed Company, Evita, and Sweeney Todd. Hal Prince passed away this past summer at the age of 91. His legacy lives on and is being celebrated at a new exhibit at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center. It explores his legacy. It's called In the Company of Harold Prince, Broadway Producer, Director, Collaborator. The exhibit is open now and runs through March 2020. I spoke with its curator, Doug Reeside. So how long had this actually been in the works?
So it's been about 3 years that we have been thinking about it. It really, of course, picked up in the last year. But I was fortunate that I was able to talk to Hal Prince a little bit about the exhibit while I was working on it.
And what kind of conversations did you have?
So the last time I met with him, I walked him through the floor plan of the exhibit, the different rooms that we would have, the different experiences that we hoped the visitor would have as they visited the library. And he said that he thought it was a swell idea and really theatrical, which made me really happy.
Well, it's so funny that you said that with the people, the experience they would have, because there's quite a bit of opportunities to be interactive.
That's right. So we tried to draw from the aesthetics of immersive theater like Sleep No More or Then She Fell. When you enter the exhibit, we have a recreation of Hal's office in around 1959 or so. And you can look at material that is on his desk that are reproduced from our collections. So you can see, I think there's a receipt from a moose head for Damn Yankees and a calendar page from his desk calendar. And we encourage people to open up the drawers and see what they find in the drawers of the desk as well.
And occasionally the phone rings.
That's right, yeah. So the phone will ring every once in a while, and I encourage you to pick it up and see who's calling.
Do people freak out when the phone rings?
Yeah.
I was like, what is that? So who's on the other side? Do you mind saying?
Yeah, so it's Hal talking about the time that Stephen Sondheim called him and said that they had just lost their producer for West Side Story, and Hal was on the road with New Girl in Town, and which at that point wasn't going terribly well either. And so Hal had said that he'd love to produce the show, and thus the collaboration on West Side Story was born.
I'm wondering, as you said, you worked on this for 3 years, you've been talking about it. As you began to curate it, mm-hmm. and you began to thinking about what you wanted in it, what was the story you wanted to tell?
There were a couple. The most important was to look at this person who really didn't, I mean, he didn't write most of the work that, or almost any of the work that he produced. He didn't design it, but he is in many ways the person to whom these musicals are credited. And so I wanted to look at the way that he did that, and the way that I think one way that he did that is through being an expert collaborator. So he created little families that he worked with and worked with them for a long time. So he did a lot of shows with Sondheim, a lot of shows with the designer Boris Aronson. And if you look at the credits for his shows, you can see that the same names keep popping up over and over again.
You said a family. What would be his role in the family?
People seem to think of him, certainly later on, as a kind of father figure. I think in the earlier shows, he was sort of a brother to really a lot of the people that he worked with. Certainly Sondheim, Bobby Griffith was sort of an older brother to him, who was his co-producer for a while. Certainly in all of the stories that I've heard of Hal, they're universally positive. People really loved working with him.
Where did he originally get his love of theater?
He talks about in interviews and also in his autobiography that when he was a kid, he was brought to the theater a lot. What he says is that it was almost like a religious experience for the way he says it is Jewish families living on the Upper West Side at the time, that they would go to the theater in the way that many people would go to church or to synagogue.
My guest is Doug Reeside, the curator of In the Company of Harold Prince, Broadway producer, director, and collaborator. It's currently at the New York Public Library for Performing Arts at Lincoln Center. It's interesting, you know, he went to UPenn, but there wasn't a major, right? There wasn't a theater major of any kind.
That's right. He majored in liberal arts and talks about how he actually feels like it's great for people to learn things other than theater in their degrees.
Why?
I think because you have to bring something to the stage aside from the theater. Of course, there's a lot of backstage musicals, mm-hmm. but he was really interested in histories, in looking at the way that human nature often, whenever a culture becomes scared, they turn against a scapegoat. And that happens over and over again in his musicals. And from Cabaret to the opera Willie Stark to even Phantom of the Opera, we see that theme rehearsed over and over again in his musicals.
And by his own description, he was privileged, quote, upper, middle, lower, rich class. And he went to, obviously, Ivy League school, UPenn. Yeah. But he did have a lot of hustle in him.
He did, yeah. So in the exhibit, we have some great letters where he is arranging an internship with Chamberlain Brown, one of the producers at the time. And then that relationship sort of falls apart, and he moves to the Abbott office. And he talks about it in interviews and in his autobiography that he had to remember to write "watch it" on the top of his desk calendar because he realized that his sort of very excited personality, his very he took a lot of initiative, and that was, he found, could be annoying to the people that he was working with.
Because he started working with George Abbott when he was very young. He was just 20-something.
In his 20s, yeah.
How would you describe that relationship?
I think that was, he describes it very much as a mentor relationship. Mm-hmm. He talks about, in the last time that I talked to him, we talked about Flora the Red Menace, which was done in the 60s, and it seems very much like a Hal Prince show, but he didn't direct it, he produced it. And he said that he would have loved to have directed it, but his mentor, George Abbott, really wanted to direct it. And I think it shows his generosity, too, and his respect for Abbott, that he was interested in this piece, but wanted his mentor to have a chance to direct this show that he wanted to direct.
Someone else you mentioned him earlier that he collaborated with was Boris Aronson. Mm. Where do we see this collaboration in the exhibit?
So there's a large room in about the middle of the exhibit that is dedicated to this collaboration. Hal Prince says that Boris Aronson was the most important person to whom he was ever introduced. And he, of course, met a lot of people, so that's saying something. We have set models for Company and Follies and Pacific Overtures. And one of my favorite moments in the exhibit, we learned as we were putting it together that the model for Company seems to have been built to allow slides that Boris Aronson had created to be projected on the model itself. So we have the original slides, and we had talked about how to present them, and we thought about maybe projecting them on the wall at one point, but we tried projecting them on the model, and it just immediately lit up, and we could see that it was designed for exactly that purpose, and it's a beautiful moment in the exhibit.
What was special about that collaboration?
I think that Hal was a very visual director. Mm-hmm. He, in many ways, was similar to a television or cinema director today, movie director today. And so he would often have the model before the score or the script was even completed. He has a letter to George Firth, the book writer for Company, where he says that Ruth Mitchell, his co-producer and sometimes stage manager, was visiting him in Germany while he was working on a film. And Ruth Mitchell brought with her the designs from Boris Aronson, and he writes in this letter to George Firth, who has not yet completed the script, that he hopes Sondheim will be there the next weekend with the songs. So he had seen the design before the show was even in any way complete.
We're talking about In the Company of Harold Prince, Broadway producer, director, and collaborator. It's currently at the NYPL Performing Arts at Lincoln Center. My guest is curator Doug Reeside. The Wheel. Mm. This giant wheel, this roulette wheel.
Yeah, so in the sort of second room of the exhibition, there is a giant, as you say, a giant roulette wheel. And on the sections of the wheel are the shows that Hal worked on. We believe that it was a gift of the person I mentioned before, Ruth Mitchell, his co-producer. Mm-hmm. And what was, it's interesting about it is you see photographs of Prince in front of this wheel in the 60s and 70s, and the names on the wheel have been updated since then. So in most of the photographs that I've seen, they only go up to about Company maybe or Zorba. But the wheel, as was received at the library, goes all the way up to Parade, which was 1998.
One of the, I think, really sort of fun things is Patti LuPone. Mm-hmm. This is her dress. Yes?
It is.
She loaned you a dress from Evita.
That's right. Yeah. So we have her dress from the Australian production of Evita, which was more or less a replica of the Broadway and London production. So it's the dress that she wore in the number of Buenos Aires. And we've staged it to have a bit of a swish to sort of show the dance that would have been danced in it.
I'm curious, do you watch people as they go through the exhibit?
Well, it's only been open for a couple of days.
Yeah.
But I have had a couple of opportunities to walk through and see people watching. We have a lot of video of interviews with Hal. We have videos from the Theater on Film and Tape collection at the library, which Hal actually helped to start. And we've been permitted since the 70s to document on video a lot of his shows. And so there's people that are just delighted to watch these productions that they may have missed in their original form.
What is the thing that you, maybe even for you or for people if you've watched them walk through, that they seem to be lingering around or that it seems to be the, oh, wow, I didn't know that sort of moment of an exhibit?
I think the models are really exciting to people, the Boris Aronson set models. They're pieces of art apart from their role in the creation of the theater. The boat from Phantom of the Opera is something that a lot of people like to look at. We have the mannequins from the masquerade scene, which opens Act Two. If you know the show, there seems to be a huge cast on the stairway, but in fact, many of the cast are mannequins, costumed mannequins, and so there's a lot of people that stop in front of that.
That was my conversation with Doug Reeside about, in the company of Harold Prince, Broadway producer, director, and collaborator. The exhibit is at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center until March 2020. Up next, a look at a new MoMA PS1 exhibit called Theater of Operations, The Gulf Wars, 1991 to 2011. That's next on All of It.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.